This episode is brought to you by Habit Aware. My Keen 2 brings awareness to my trichotillomania by giving my wrist a gentle hug or vibration when I'm doing the scanning behavior. Bring awareness into your life by visiting barbaralally.com/habitaware and use code LALLYLOVE for 10% off.
I am a filmmaker. Up until recently, I only made documentaries, but I have been making movies since I was a little kid. And when I was young, I had a really close friend who pulled out all of her eyebrows and eyelashes, and she confided in me about that. And I kind of carried that story around with me for years. When I was in film school and college, I made a short documentary about it. And then I moved to New York after college and got my first job as an assistant editor in a post-production house where they cut commercials and stuff. And I just couldn't stop thinking about trichotillomania. I couldn't stop thinking about it. Why did this happen to her? Why was she doing it? How did that evolve? How did her family and friends feel about it? All of that stuff. So I picked up my little DV cam and went out into Central Park and just started interviewing random people on the street about it. And it turns out like no one had heard of it. And I was a rarity. So I contacted the New York chapter, a support group for Trich, and they put me in touch with a handful of people, and I got some friends together and we picked up our cameras. I mean, I didn't even know how to white balance at the time. I was 22, 23 when I started making Trickster. And that's sort of how it began. And then documentaries are really hard. It took me 5 years to make, a year alone just to edit. So I got to know everybody at TLC and still maintain a lot of those relationships. And that community is really important to me.
So when your friend told you, do you remember that moment? You know, what did she share with you at that time?
We were both on the swim team together and we were in a car driving back after practice, and I was buckling my seatbelt and I turned around and looked at her and I said, oh, you don't have any eyebrows or eyelashes. And then for months, her parents went, you know, taping up her hands at night with gloves, and they took her to the doctor, and the doctor said, this could be this thing called trichotillomania. And her mom was like, no, that's not what it is. She says, that's not it. And then we were doing homework together one day and she confided in me that she was doing it, but she just didn't know. She didn't know why, and she didn't know how to stop, and she didn't know how to like tell, especially her parents, about it, because they were so adamant that, you know, it was probably the chemicals in the water or something that was making this happen. So
did you feel as though, hey, you know, maybe I am the accountability partner now. Maybe I am, you know, if I see her doing it, do I point it out? How did you feel, you know, being young as well, learning that you have a friend who maybe needs your support?
I felt kind of responsible, honestly, in a way. I invited her over to my house to do homework together because that's when she felt that she was having the urge to pull the most. So that was sort of what I did. And I tried to be there for her when she was ready to tell her parents that she was going through that.
I think what's so interesting, and we're definitely going to talk about Trickster, I have a ton of questions, but you know, we are so little when we start. And that's a really tough thing, because how do I navigate telling my parents or telling adults around me when I feel like, hey, I actually might get in trouble for this?
It's really interesting. There are a lot of people that can't understand at all why someone would do that. I feel like, you know, I know that some people have said that they think there might be some sort of genetic linkage there. I definitely feel like I understand a little bit. I've dabbled with skin picking a little bit. So I have found myself going to the line and then pulling myself back. But yeah, I can imagine, especially, I mean, for my friend, it started when she was 9. And to not understand her behavior, not know how to talk about it, and to have her parents saying, oh no, trichotillomania wouldn't be something that would happen to my daughter. You know, I can imagine the shame that she must have felt going through that.
I was going to ask, because you're now in this BFRB world, if you have noticed, you know, through your lifetime experiencing BFRBs, you mentioned skin picking. Would you mind sharing a little bit about that?
I definitely can see myself as a bit of a skin picker. I mean, during COVID, at the beginning of COVID, I was really stressed out, and I've never told anybody about this, but I had some ingrown hairs on my leg, kind of like Sophie and Trickster. I had some ingrown hairs on my leg and I got tweezers and I started kind of just lifting them out from under the skin and picking them out. And I did get to a point where I was doing it every day for like a couple months at a time, right at the beginning of COVID. And I started getting scabs and the scabs were healing over and I was picking at them more. And I was like, oh, this is going to turn into a big thing if I don't cut it back. I can always go right up to the line. So I do think that there are instances. I'll pick at my nails too if I've got a hangnail and I don't cut it right away. And then I have one right now. I was picking at it the other night. So I'll kind of get up there, but I can notice it because I know the minute I get out of hand, it can go over the top because I do have a little bit of an addictive personality. So I do think that I don't want to say like, oh, I understand, because I'll never understand what some of the people in my film have gone through. But I do think I have a lot of empathy for it.
When you first started interviewing people on the street, you mentioned, hey, nobody really knew. And I experienced that as well. Anytime I said anything, it's like, what? What are you talking about? Were there any moments or interviews that did surprise you that maybe there was some background knowledge?
One of the first interviews I did, I would say like 90% of the people didn't know what I was talking about. And one woman was like, oh yeah, my mom. And someone else was like, oh, my brother. So that I know, a lot of times people have heard of the behavior, but they don't know that it has a name and they don't know that it's an actual disorder.
When you were selecting the people to follow, you mentioned that you went to the TLC, the New York chapter. How did that experience go?
Well, I was in touch with a support group, so I didn't actually go in and speak to the group. They gave me, I think they spoke to the group, saw who was interested in potentially talking about it, and then they gave me individual names. And then I went and had coffee with people just on a one-on-one basis, just to tell them who I was and what I was interested in doing. And we went from there. So not everybody that I first met with is in the film, but like Valerie is one of the people that I think she was the first person I met with, actually.
You filmed for an entire year. You followed them a year of their life. If you don't mind sharing, I would love to know like how exactly that worked out, because I know Rebecca's from a different country and all this cool stuff. So once you had the people that said, "Hey, I'll actually share publicly, like I'll do this with you," what were kind of the next steps?
Yeah, we shot, I think, closer to a year and a half, but I was working full time, and the team that made the film with me, we all had full time jobs. So this was like nights and weekends. Schedule an interview on a weekend. Someone's got an art show. Let's go film her art show after work one night. Everything we did was nights and weekends, and we just picked up the cameras that we had access to and showed up basically. Rebecca was studying at the New York Film Academy in New York for the whole summer. So I think it was on Twitter we connected, and I ended up same thing. I think I met her at Barnes and Nobles, and she agreed to be on camera. And I kind of always have felt like she's my little sister because we're both filmmakers, and I'm Scottish, so I have a Scottish citizenship. So there's a little bit of, I feel like a big sister to her. I know she's older now. She probably wouldn't want that, but I always have felt that way about her. So yeah, it was just like, keep me posted. What do you have going on that we could go shoot? And we'll go shoot that and see what happens. And I didn't know how to make a documentary either. It was just me and my friends, and we wanted to make a difference and we wanted to do something important. So we filmed with the people that would sign a release. Not everybody wanted to sign a release. There were people that I wish that I could have shot with that were deeply uncomfortable, which I completely understand, especially at the retreat. There were several people that I didn't know the community that well yet, and they didn't know me. So there was a bit of a barrier there. But yeah, it was sort of like, figure it out. We didn't know. If I could go back and redo it, I would do things differently. Absolutely. But I'm still really proud of what my little 23-year-old self did.
I mean, to be 23, and you made something that has changed so many people's lives. I'm sure you probably still receive messages. You got one from me. Hey, by the way, I want to talk to you. Like you are huge in this community. They needed this, and to be 23 and to do it, oh my gosh, that's a huge feat. That's amazing.
Thank you. That's really nice to hear, because yeah, I know I don't think about it like that, but it's like I messaged you as Trickster's my first baby, and I have a lot of care and love for that film.
Did you have any ideas that after meeting these people and being able to observe their life and talk about them, your ideas changed?
I made this movie for my friend. It was for me. It was like an exploration of what is it, why, and how, and all of those initial questions. But a year and a half in. I've shot a retreat. I've shot at the conference. I'm used to like bald kids running around in front of me, and I don't give it a second look. I don't, it just, it feels so normal at this point. I guess what the thing that changed for me is I was hoping that in doing this film, maybe this is in retrospect looking back, I thought that maybe it would help her feel more comfortable in herself. Because really, Trickster is a film about acceptance and accepting yourself for who you are, which I think is a universal message. It doesn't just apply to people with BFRBs, it applies to all of us. You know, if we don't accept ourselves and love ourselves for who we are, how is anybody else going to do that either? So I think it did help her, but yet she's still not publicly in that community at all.
What were some of the challenges that you faced trying to create this documentary?
I was really nervous when I shot at the retreat because I was showing up with a bunch of people that I had never met, with some cameras, with Valerie, who at that time, Valerie and I, were friends. We shared a tent and everything while we were shooting. So Val was sort of my touch point, but I was nervous. I was 23, I think, and leading this crew and standing up in front of people and introducing myself and trying to convince a group of people that's there to on a retreat to be like away from the world and be sitting in their truth and asking them to be really vulnerable with me. I did have a woman approach me in tears, me and Christina Pearson, in tears, saying that she was sure that my cameras were shooting her. And I had to say, like, listen, legally, I can't do that. You didn't sign a release with me. Also, we are not shooting you. And I felt so guilty because she's there to release her stress. And I felt like I was adding to it. So I definitely felt a tremendous amount of pressure and responsibility. But at this point, I had already spoken to Christina and got to know her better. And Christina was able to reassure that Christina had given me the green light. So, I had tread with caution, but yeah, that definitely, there were some people that distrusted me at first, which is understandable.
Wow, and from watching it, obviously I would never have known that at all, but it does make sense. Like, I remember my parents finding out about TLC and bringing me a pamphlet, and I was like, oh, great, there's people that look like me on this paper. Yeah, I'm not gonna go though. Like, in my journey, I was so scared to still meet somebody. So, thank you for sharing that. It was very interesting.
There were definitely some people I would have liked to have interviewed that were there that wouldn't come on camera.
What were some moments while filming, editing, anything, where you felt, hey, this is success. Like, this is, I feel great about this moment or this memory. Like, this is working for me.
Oh gosh, well, success is a loaded term. But I think I can tell you about the time that I felt most proud was when we shot the conference, which I think was in 2014. Oh gosh, it was 10 years ago. But I had everybody together. I had Valerie, Sophie, Jesse, Rebecca. We were all going to the conference, which was in New Jersey. And I had three different camera teams, which is a camera person, an audio person, and a producer. And then I had an interview kind of booth set up in a hallway for people to jump in if they wanted to say something. And then I had a producer that was putting wristbands on people that had signed releases so we knew who we could and couldn't shoot. And I rented a van and I drove it through New York City and I picked up equipment and I loaded up the back with all of the team and the crew and I drove everybody out to New Jersey. I'd never driven in New York, and we were there and we were all sleeping in these hotel rooms and I was trying to like be at every shoot and we had so many moving pieces going on. And, the weekend was a whirlwind. And I drove the van back in and I dropped everybody off and I dropped off the equipment and I dropped off the van and I got home and Rebecca was staying with me. And I sat down on the couch and I burst into tears because it was just like, I was so proud of myself. I had run this team and I had done it. And a year prior, I was on the street interviewing people in Central Park, not knowing how to even use a camera. So that was a really big moment. I still reference that as like, that's probably the moment where I felt the most proud, is after I had actually done that and felt that that came from me. I put that together and it was a big deal at the time.
When you first showed the film, how did people receive it? People in the community, and then also people who were outside of the community.
Our premiere was at the Soho Film Festival in 2015, I think. And we sold out two screenings, which was really cool. And I mean, it's kind of like one of those things you kind of don't remember because I was so excited about it. What I remember is that my dad was sitting behind me during the film and I didn't know. And at the end of the film, he reached over and he put his arms around me and he said, "There's not a dry eye in the house." And then we went up and did our Q&A. And it was fun. Grace, the little girl in the film who's now in college, Grace and all of her sisters were there, and Erica, her mom, who I love her. It was just really cool. I mean, I did get some hate online when I was making the film, which was interesting, but I've never heard anything negative really about the film. Certainly as a filmmaker and now a more established documentary filmmaker, there's a lot of things I would have done differently, but you know, hindsight's 2020.
How did you respond to people who just couldn't understand? Did you know HabitAware also offers virtual peer coaching? This one-to-one peer-based program will coach you through shifting mindset, practicing healthy strategies, and creating your personal roadmap to recovery. To work with me, Ellen, or Anila, head over to habitaware.com/coaching today.
Being someone that doesn't have trick, I got comments like, this film took me a long time to make. It took me 5 years, and I ran three different crowdfunding campaigns to raise the money to finish it. So I had a lot of people that had like donated to earlier campaigns that were like, "I've given up. Like the film's never going to come out. Like this was just a, you know, just things like that." Or a lot of people that wanted to be in the film after the fact that were mad that they couldn't be in the film, but it's like, but I already finished. I got a message about it 2 days ago. Like, "Hey, I want to share my story." And I'm like, "That's great." 10 years ago, maybe I would have just things that I can't, or I think, you know, when you have something like Trick, and you especially you have a lot of younger girls who now there's so much more of a community, but especially 10 years ago or 15 years ago, there really wasn't. So when young people saw Trickster, they felt seen for the first time. So I was inundated with messages from girls, teen girls all over the world. I mean, we had donations from 20 different countries on our first campaign asking for help. How do I talk to my parents? Like, how do I do this? And I'm not a therapist, I'm a filmmaker with a passion for this topic, but I'm certainly not someone that can give advice, any kind of advice on this. So I just basically figured out how to say, "Hey, like I'm so glad that you're talking about it, and here's TLC," because I needed to like point them in a direction of a place to go that actually had actionable resources for them, because I'm not it. And sometimes when you make a film like this, I made a second doc that also was pretty heavy, and so you know, those are the kinds of messages I get, and I just have to figure out how to pivot them to the place that they need to go because I'm not the right resource.
You created this and made this for your friend. And your second documentary, Second Assault, that was your story. When you were filming Trickster and sharing the experiences of others, is that when you wanted to share your own?
No, I didn't think about making Second Assault until like 2016. So Trickster had passed, and Trickster was so much work. I mean, it's not just 5 years of shooting and spending all of your free time and all of my free money to make this. It was building a website, you know, running campaigns, show like talking to people, the relationships, so much work, legal stuff, releases, all that stuff. I didn't know anything about that. It was so much work that I thought, I'll never make a film again. It's too much work for me. Of course, I'm a filmmaker. I can't stop making films. So then, you know, when I feel passionate about enough about something, I know I'm going to sit in this for years. Is this important enough for me to dedicate years of my life towards? Because I don't get paid for stuff. So yeah, no, I didn't think about Second Assault when I was shooting Trickster.
And you won a bunch of awards for Trickster and other things too. Like you are an awarded documentary filmmaker.
Yeah, Trickster won a few, I think.
How did it feel to literally win awards for this documentary that you made?
I mean, it was great. The one I was most proud of for Trickster was it was called the Best Young Filmmaker Award, which was presented by Los Angeles Center Studios, which is a big studio. And they held a screening of Trickster on their lot. It had like 300 seats or something like that, maybe even bigger. I don't even remember. But it was really cool because I got to be here in LA, and there's a bunch of people that are involved with TLC that are here in LA that showed up, and I got to meet them or reconnect with them after conferences. And so that was really cool, especially for something that started out with like just me in a park.
Obviously, you're making this to change the world, right? To change the lives of people with this disorder and show, hey, you are seen. But it doesn't hurt to also get, you know, recognition, and you deserve it. Seriously.
Well, also, I think, one of the things I thought about is there's parents have such a hard time understanding when their child comes to them and tells them about Trick. I wanted there to be some sort of resource that's easy, like, oh, I can go to Amazon. If I have a parent and I have a kid that says, hey, they're pulling out their eyebrows, what do? I can go to Amazon right now and watch this film. Granted, there's information in Trickster now that's outdated, but it still can give a sense of the emotional impact and that there is community there and that it's not just made up, that you can't just stop it, right?
And I do love that you included people of all ages. One thing that was so, what I thought was really great is that just from my experience seeing people online, you hear a lot of women share about their experience. You rarely hear about men. And it was nice to see a man be able to share and talk about that so that the men in the BFRB community could have someone that, hey, that person looks like me. I can relate to that. That I feel seen now.
I wish I had included more. There was a particular man, and he knows who he is, that was at the retreat that I really wanted to get on camera. And he did come up to me after he saw Trickster, and he said he regretted not letting me speak with him because he didn't trust me at the time. And valid, But I do wish that I had more perspectives. Trickster is a very white woman leaning film, and there's a lot of people that suffer from BFRBs that are just not white women.
Do you ever think in the future you would ever do like a follow-up or another film about BFRBs, whether it's trick or not?
Yes and no. No, because again, it's so much work. But as I grow in my career, if someone would come to me and say they wanted to do like a refresher with a new perspective and hand me some money to do that, then I would say yes. But honestly, the fundraising and the work it takes to go into something like this, I feel like I did it. And with every new film, I sort of was the hair pulling girl for a long time. And then I was the rape girl because I made a film about rape. And, right now I'm the tooth girl because I made a film about the teeth. So, you kind of get stuck with that. People come to you for that. Like I said, people are still emailing me about Trickster, and it's a heavy space to sit in for a long time and forever, really, because that's the film that I made. And I'm happy to do it, but it would have to be a new perspective and have something different to say. And if it did happen, it would be easier than the last time because I'm much more established in my career at this point. But still, oh man, I wouldn't have done it. If I had known, I wouldn't have done it, how hard it was. But I'm so glad that I did and that I didn't know. Oh, that sounds like such a downer thing to say.
That's true though, because it is a lot like we watch the film, we enjoy it, we get to sit on our couch and watch it, but you really don't think about how you have a job and you're scheduling all these things. It is important to understand that, like, hey, you're working your butt off to make this for us, and now we get to enjoy it forever. And thank you. It's huge. It's huge. For many people, this is the first time they have seen themselves represented in somebody else. Now that you have created this documentary, have you noticed in other forms of media people showing BFRBs?
1,000%. I mean, I would venture a guess to say that outside of someone that has an active BFRB, I'm probably right there in terms of someone that would notice something. Bald spots, nails being chewed up, all of that. And people in my own life, my professional life, have come to me and said, hey, I saw you made Trickster. That's about trichotillomania. I have that. And, so I get a lot of confessions and I'm like, great. But I also notice, and this is like one of my biggest pet peeves, it happens constantly. When I'm in a meeting and someone's stressed out or something, someone's like, oh, I'm just pulling my hair out over this. And I'm just like, oh, so I'm usually the person to call them out and be like, let me tell you about this. So yeah, I'm completely aware of it. I am hugely informed about how Trick is presented or all BFRBs are presented in the media. I'm writing a script right now and there's a character and I was like, I feel like she could have Trick, but I didn't want to write that in because I want the representation to be accurate. And I think for so long, like in young adults, the people that we see on screen with Trick are not presented well. Like Trick is just a piece of the character. It's not like emblematic of something else. I don't know. I'm not saying that right, but yeah, I'm really, really in tune with it, whether in public or in the media or in meetings, as the person that has to be the one to be like, let me school you on this real quick. what you're saying could be taken really offensively.
Yeah, whenever I hear that, they're, oh, that makes me want to pull my hair out. I go, oh, like me? And then it's awkward.
It's kind of constant. And then but I think it's important, we should be calling that stuff out just to make someone aware. Words matter.
That always interests me because I'm like laser focused. If I notice, I'm watching, I'm reading, I'm seeing it. And it's always interesting to me because I want to ask these people, these authors, producers, everything, because BFRBs are constantly in things. They're always in them, whether it's small or big. And it's like, who brought that up? And do they have the experience? Because often I'm seeing it so dramatic and a big chunk of hair, like from The Sopranos, all these different things. And it's like, well, someone in the room brought this up. And I wonder why. I would just like to ask, just out of curiosity's sake, because it is something that is always every book I read, I feel like now I'm always seeing someone chewing their lip, biting their nails. It's so common, but yet we don't talk about it ever, in depth.
And it is like I always say, it's under an umbrella. It's an umbrella and it's a spectrum. And you might not even realize that this is something that you have. I mean, I have a friend that for years has chewed her fingernails all the way down. And when I started making Trickster, she's a high school friend. I was like, you have this too. And she's like, oh, I had no idea, because for some reason that's acceptable.
I used to try to bite my nails on purpose to try to switch it over, like when I was little, because I had seen people around me biting their nails, and I didn't know in my head that they were the same thing. I just knew like, oh, nervous habit. That's what a lot of people would call it back then. And so I would try my best to actively try to bite my nails, and it didn't stick. But I'm happy with the way my journey went. But it was just funny to me, this little kid. It's like, oh, you do that, and nobody's making fun of you. Well, let me do that instead, because people are making fun of mine. So.
Well, and it is interesting how those things can migrate. Like I have a friend who was a eyebrow eyelash puller, and now she's a picker. She doesn't pull her hair anymore, but she picks every day, and she's covering herself up with makeup and really insecure about it. So there's still a manifestation there.
What would be your advice to people who want to start sharing their stories, whether it's by creating a documentary or just simply on social media?
Obviously, we're both on TikTok. I have three different TikTok accounts. And while I think that TikTok can be really dangerous just because some of the comments can get out of control, I also think it's an incredibly powerful tool. I mean, I put Trickster in its entirety on TikTok in like 1 minute clips. And one of the clips even has 1.3 million views. And I could see that putting Trickster on TikTok had a direct impact on the amount of people that streamed it on Amazon. So I'm like, that's cool. So it can still have relevancy. So I think stories matter and there's power in sharing your stories. There's power in knowing that you're not alone in something, in any piece of your life. I think it's tough to learn how to sit with those comments. I don't think it's healthy. I don't think it's good. I mean, I still remember every negative comment or message that was sent to me when I was making Trickster. Because I was trying so hard and I cared so much, and I felt like, wait, but you don't understand. Like, I'm not trying to be like this. I'm trying to help and like share stories. But, strangers on the internet don't know who you are or what you're trying to do. And it's hard to navigate that. So, but I do think that TikTok is a great way to do that because there is a community of people with BFRBs on TikTok.
TikTok seems to be a safer place for people to be more vulnerable because it shows you what you want to see more so. Like the algorithm works harder than like Instagram, for example. Like Instagram, people say that like, oh, it'll show it to everybody, and then like, more mean comments. But TikTok, it's like, oh, these are my people, these are my people, these are my people. You like a few videos about Trick, you're going to get more Trick. And so that I can totally see why, people want to share you. Look up hashtag Trickotillomania. Oh my gosh, thousands of videos.
I know, I'm sure things have shifted, but I know that TikTok has changed a lot, especially in the past year, but I always think of Instagram as everybody that I know in real life living their most amazing versions of themselves, like living their best lives, and TikTok is everyone I don't know all over the world living their most authentic lives. So I definitely feel more comfortable. I run a TikTok for filmmakers as well. And I post mostly just like in my room with no makeup on, talking about film festivals and strategy and filmmaking and stuff. And I could never post that stuff on Instagram. I don't want people that actually know me from my high school seeing me. It's embarrassing. I don't know. I don't know why. The clip that got all those views was of Grace is talking to her sister, and her sister says, if anyone is gonna make tries to make fun of you, I'll pound them for you. And like that just went crazy, like it went viral. I've never seen anything like it, you know? And then one of Grace's sisters was on TikTok and saw it, and I was like, oh hey, you know, that there's there you are in the
That's so
clip.
cute.
Yeah, but they're all like adults now.
And imagine if everyone stopped after one mean comment, nobody would be talking about it at all. No one would talk about anything because everybody has something to say about everything.
Yeah, absolutely. But I also think just it takes a long time, and I don't know that any of us will ever fully get there. But the more comfortable that you can feel in your own skin, you know, whether it's the amount of hair you have, or how heavy you are, or what your career is, or what your skin's like, or, you know, anything, the more comfortable you are with who you are, the easier it is to just be who you are without having to worry about it. And that's why I put that line at the end of the film, Rebecca saying, I've got to accept that I have this disorder. I've got to accept that it's got to be with me for life. Doesn't necessarily have to be with her for life, but you know, she also says, I've got to accept that I'll never have the long hair. She has hair down to her shoulders now. So I think that the more that we can just accept ourselves as we are and go from there, that's the way I aspire to be. Work in progress.